Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
When Serena and I were first talking about having kids, and I was freaking out, we went to this couples therapist. And one day, I started talking about Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You know, how I was worried about being the odd man out, being like Goldilocks to Mama Bear and Papa Bear.
You mean being the baby bear?
What?
The Goldilocks is the intruder in that story, not the baby. There's Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Baby Bear. Then Goldilocks comes into the triangle that's already a triangle. Don't you see? It's already working as a triangle. It's a foursome in that story that's the problem. It's
whatever. Who cares about the bear family? They're bears. Why are we talking about bears?
You brought it up.
What a great line, a great story. And it comes from a new play that is playing about Bass Theater over on Belmont at Theater Wit, and it is called Dada Wolf, Papa Hot by Peter Parnell. And welcome to the podcast, everybody. This is Paul Lisnick. We have a theater week for you. Going to put politics aside for this week, which is probably a welcome break, and talk about this great play that's running through February 16th. Joining me, three of the critical cast members, although everybody's pretty important in this cast. Joining me is Ben Sprunger, who plays Rob, who I've admired for just many years as well. You've seen him maybe in Will and Grace, and I saw him in the baseball show. Why am I forgetting?
Take me out.
Thank you very much. And Brooke Reed joins us, who plays his husband, Alan, who's been seen in My Fair Lady and Zine and all sorts of stuff. And then our final guest, Keith Kupfer. It's hard to come up. His role is Michael, and I can't think of a theater company or stage he has not been on in the city. One of those, as we talked before we came on, longtime legends in the city. But he is the founding member and ensemble member of Rivendell Theater Ensemble, so where he recently appeared and always does. Welcome to all of you, gentlemen. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Ben, I'll start with you because you also kind of full-time are there at About Face Theater. And, you know, when I think about what this play is about, you know, you're inclined to say, especially because it's about face, well, it's about, you know, gay couples adopting kids and whatever, or having kids, I should say. And the truth is, I think this play is broader than that. I think it's about parenthood and the fact that parenthood changes everybody's lives. But you tell me if I'm right or correct me.
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty universal. There are a lot of perspectives that are voiced and that are on display in the production, from an older gay couple in their late 40s, early 50s, from a younger gay couple who's in their 20s and 30s, from a heterosexual couple, from another woman who's divorced with kids, and everybody has kids of varying ages. And I think that anybody who comes, whether or not they actually are married, divorced, or have children, they're going to hear a perspective that either they've voiced themselves or that they've heard a friend or a family member voice as well, because it's just universal. It's about raising children, and who doesn't know somebody who's doing that, you know?
And of course, that's right. And of course, in the relationship, Alan and Rob, played by you and Brooke, you are a couple. You're raising a child, and there's those dynamics. But Keith, I want to come to you for a moment because you, of course, represent the straight married guy with very close gay friends, and yet your character, Michael, has his own issues in relationships. I'm not going to give away too much in terms of what's going on in Michael's life, but it goes to show that raising kids is tough for the straight couples as well.
Correct. Like you said, I have my own problems in this play. And I think your point about it kind of being about parenting and trying to have your own life as a parent and an identity as a parent while you are giving so much of your life to your child is sort of at the crux of the play, and particularly the couple that Ben and Brooke are playing.
The play is set, I'm fairly sure, Brooke, in 2015, right? It's after the gay marriage decision, and given that's probably around when it was written, and it seems to be set in that time.
Right.
And so when we look at your couple, it's interesting because Ben, your partner Rob, clearly as a psychologist, and he's all about this kid and all about raising the kid. But your character Alan has so many facets to him, and looking so many ways, but also feels seems to feel sort of challenged by the fact that maybe your partner loves the kid more than you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I also feel that what's one of the most fun aspects of this play is the ways in which it makes apparent that the problems of having children and being married are fairly universal. But gay marriages, LGBTQ marriages in which both partners are ostensibly the same gender and they do produce children, usually does mean that only one of those people is biologically related to the child. And that can lead to issues of disenfranchisement within the family, such as occur within our show. And also, it is something new to discuss. Yeah. Keith has this line that's one of my favorite lines. He says, at one point in a scene with me, he says, "I mean, it's gay, but it's still marriage, right?" And I have no response. My character has literally no response but to walk away because, wow, it is. So it's the oldest of questions and issues, and also brand spanking new, and nobody's done the research yet. Right. Another line that I have.
And, you know, Keith, what I find important about your character, Michael, you know, it could have taken a different route, right? This play could have been about homophobic people who don't think gays should have kids. And that's just not what Michael's all about. Michael really could care less. And the line that Brooke just told us about really is, it's gay, but it's still just marriage, right? So I think, how important do you think your character is for the mainstream person who watches this show to kind of get that message?
I think it's good that this character is not homophobic and really hasn't that never comes up in his dealings with his friend. I think it is important that this character can be seen by mainstream straight people who, you know, I guess it's. It's good to see those positive characters on stage where the prejudices or the homophobia really is not an issue at all. Now it's not realistic in a lot of lives, but I think that the playwright really had a different agenda than being homophobic. And the mistress in the scene with my mistress, there's a little bit of that, this kind of elitist, leftist, liberal kind of homophobia that exists and people don't know that they have it. So I think that scene, you see some of that come out. But my character doesn't really have it.
I would like to point out, by the way, that couples who don't have kids but have dogs find themselves having conversations very much like the ones that you all have in the challenges in this play. Lines like, just to share one with you, you know, you care about the dogs more than you care about me. And like, okay, let's go back to talking about Dada Wolf Papa Ha. Ben, I thought one of my comments in my review of the show is I thought the casting was superb in this show. Now, you've obviously done a lot of other About Face Theater shows. You're involved in every show that they do over there with your role. But I was really struck by how great this casting is. And I don't know if you can just chat a little bit about just some of the other great roles. I mean, Lily and some of the folks who are just so perfect for these roles.
Well, Rachel. You know, it was cast by the director and another director about town, sure. Stephen Shellhart. Kira Fromm, who directed the play, is also our casting director here in-house at About Face. So being a sort of at-large director in Chicago, she gets to see a lot of shows and knows the community really, really well. So she called in, you know, the very best people that she felt were for the roles, and she amassed this cast, and kudos to her for bringing us all together. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of people who came to this show that I wasn't quite aware of their work. Lily Mojekwu, I don't think I've ever seen Lily before, but she's fantastic. Rachel Sullivan, who hasn't appeared in things for a while. She took a break to have her own kids mm-hmm. and get married and things like that. She's fantastic. Shane Kenyon, I have seen before, and I've seen Keith, of course, in other things. And Joss Banks, who's relatively new to town as well. Amassing this cast was really great. I've worked with Brooke before, where we also played husbands, actually, in a production that I think was in 2009 at About Face called The Flowers. So our relationship goes back a long way, and it was very easy, I think, to imagine us as husbands since we've already done it before. We've got that under our belt.
Why not? It's just it's almost like revisiting the role.
Right.
Keith, you have, I mean, you all have been seen on many stages, but when I think a lot of people think of you, they and their mind does go to Goodman and Steppenwolf and just so many of the places you've been. And I don't know if this was your first show at About Face Theater, but I'm just sort of curious to talk to me a little bit about your sense of what it's like to be in a show, these themes, the message of About Face Theater, and how important it is to take that stage.
Is that for me?
That's for you, Keith.
Because
you're the legend.
Yeah. This is my second show with About Face. I was in a production of Execution of Justice that Gary Griffin directed. But I think that it's very important that the work that About Face does, putting plays out there that champion the LGBTQ community because of a number of reasons, particularly now in this climate, it's more important than ever that people in the mainstream come to these shows and see that they have to break down these barriers of ignorance, basically, of these ideas that are held and perpetrated on other levels. So I think any theater company that champions the underdog, the outcast, by any by the mainstream, I'm saying, by or political agendas, they're the most important, you know. And doing new work by new gay writers or the message has always got to be out there. So I find it very important to work with these companies on new work.
And Brooke, you know, the show, and listen, we're talking about it so seriously. The truth is the show is very funny.
Good.
lots of serious moments, but I mean, it is a funny show with lots of laughter. So let's not ignore that fact. And yet what Keith just said sort of triggers something for me because it is set modern day, but it's clearly pre-Trump to me. And
a little bit.
Yeah. And so I get a sense when you listen to the cast, it's almost like if this show had been written just maybe a year later or a year and a half later, there might be some different things happening in this show. So how important to you is it that this show be playing now, given the fact that it's a bit pre-Trump?
Well, I have this hope that Trump is going to end up being an easily forgotten blip in our national history and discourse. And if that's in vain, please don't disabuse me of the notion during this interview.
I will.
But, I'll do that later.
It feels very now to me when we're doing it. The jokes are landing as very current. The magic in the jokes has a lot to do with the fact that the salient issues of the play are ones that nobody has discussed. I haven't seen a play about... that deals with gay marriage issues, because gay marriage, marriages between two people of the same gender, have only been federally recognized for a very short period of years. So, you know, the first AIDS plays didn't come out the month that we learned about the virus. You know, it takes time to start developing that discourse dramatically and artistically. And I hope this isn't, I certainly hope this isn't the last to explore these issues. And
what a great point you make, by the way, and Ben, because, you know, it's true. We still get productions of Angels in America or you know, other gay, not gay thing, but age-related plays. And some seem to, the normal heart, some seem to sort of weather time better than others, although they always, you know, have their stamp of having an important message. Ben, what do you think? Years from now, does Dada Wolf Papa Hot still take the stage because the message continues to be universal?
I think so, actually. The fact that it doesn't have any sort of, like, current events or there's, you know, there isn't a presence of Trump in the play, I think it's probably a good thing because it would be a slightly different play. But without that, it's just, it's these issues that are going to be universal in child raising and child rearing till the end of time. I mean, if you get a couple together, regardless of if they're heterosexual and they had a natural pregnancy and birth, or it's somebody who decided they were going to go through this and they went through IVF or they went through the process of adoption, like, these issues are going to pop up. The child is going to come out. There's going to be this realization that, oh my God, what have we done? We didn't realize it was going to be like this. We didn't know it was going to be this expensive. We didn't know it was going to add all these stressors onto our relationship. We had a really good thing, and now we're dealing with this, and not to be, entirely pessimistic about child rearing in the first place, but these things are going to be happening until the end of time, that parents are going to say, yes, we want to be parents. And then once they are parents, they're going to say, oh, crap, what did we just get ourselves into, And especially for gay couples, if they're at great expense to them, at great cost to them, to go through IVF or to go through the process of adoption, like, that adds an even weirder sort of bizarre stressor to the relationship that they chose this and went through a very long process to make it happen, and now can they endure it? It's crazy to me.
And by the way, Ben, was Peter Parnell, who wrote the play, was he involved in all this, or did anybody talk with him?
Nope, he wasn't, actually. He's, our director said at one point in time, she usually does reach out to all the playwrights that she works with, and Peter Parnell was, I don't think he said, no, I don't want to talk to her, but she said that he was very difficult to get a hold of. Wow. And that nothing ever happened.
He's probably taking care of his kids.
Yeah, he does have a little girl, I believe.
There you go.
Much like in the play.
Well, whether you have kids or dogs, it does work for either, so I want to encourage everybody, check it out. This play, it's funny, it's got emotions to it, it's about relationships and parenting and fidelity or infidelity. Benjamin Sprunger and Brooke Thomas Reed and Keith Kupfer, I think you just add so much to the cast. It's such a well-cast show. I was incredibly impressed with it, enjoyed it so very much. I encourage people to see it. You've got until or through February 16th. It's at Theater Wit, which is over on Belmont, part of that theater complex over there. You can get tickets at aboutfacetheater.com, and I'm so glad you spell theater the right way. It ends the English way, T-R-E. Mm-hmm. Aboutfacetheater.com. So happy when you do that. By the way, your theater company, Keith, do you end it with the T-R-E or the T-E-R?
The English way.
Good for you. and you know what? It's not, thank goodness that was the answer, too, because otherwise I'm embarrassed. Tickets are only like $20, $20 to $38. It's such an intimate setting where you guys are. Just what a great show. I want to thank you, all of you, for taking time to chat with me. Encourage people to see Dada Woof, Papa Hot. By the way, and Brooke, is it fair to tell people where that phrase comes from? Because you hear the name Dada Woof, Papa Hot, and people may go off in the wrong direction about what that's really referring to. Can we say what it means?
I sure think you can. It's my my daughter in the play's first four words that she spoke, and if you string them together, they conjure a certain gay compliment.
Right. And then when you hear in the show what it is, you kind of go, oh, that's where that comes from.
Yeah, it's not about the art movement.
Right.
It's not, Salvador Dali related. Or
right. Which also, there's a drinking game in there, Keith, where people can come up with what other words their kid said first and then see what kind of, reference that can be made from those.
Maybe there's a tie-in, yeah.
There could be a tie-in. Ben, Brooke, Keith, thank you guys. Thanks so much. Have a great run. Break legs, as they say, for the rest of the run. I enjoyed it. I hope everybody will. AboutFaceTheater.com. Check it out through February 16th. Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you, Paul.
All right, well, let's turn our attention now to an important project that is going on, really kind of a unique coupling, if you will, the Black Ensemble Theater. You've heard a lot about them over the years on this podcast, but they're now working with Northeastern Illinois University. They're presenting as a partnership something called Jackie Taylor's Anti-Racism Drama Series and Residency Program. Started in January, going through March of this year. It's got a few performances going on, and I wanted you to know about those because you're going to want to check it out. And what an interesting partnership. I'm curious to find out how all of this happened. Joining me to talk about it from the Black Ensemble Theater is Daryl Brooks. He's the producing managing director at Black Ensemble. In all fairness, Jackie Taylor would never want to miss an interview like this, but she is officially tied up right now. And so she would have joined us along with Daryl, but we got Daryl, and I appreciate that. Also, hey, Daryl. We also have Andrea Evans. She's the director of the Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies at Northeastern Illinois University. And Tim Libretti, the acting associate dean of the College of Arts and Sciences. Welcome all, and appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
I'm going to come to, since I used to be a dean, I'll start with you, Tim, and come to you and sort of say, so who approached who with this partnership and said, you know, that's something where our university and the Black Ensemble Theater, that ought to happen with a project working together?
Well, I like to think the universe brought us together, but I happened to see these three plays. There's three plays in 3 weeks, the very plays we're doing. The Black Ensemble Theater performed at the DeSable Museum last spring, and they were followed by wonderful conversations. They were on important and timely issues. And what I heard a lot of people saying in the audience after these plays, the audience, I guess, was more my generation, and I won't tell you which generation it is. But
it might be mine, too.
Said more young people should see these plays, which led me to think, well, it would be perfect for our student body, and we have young people who would love to see these plays. So I approached at that time Jackie Taylor and Irvin Gardner, who's the playwright of the first play, and said, you know, what do you think? Would you think about a partnership of some sort or doing these on our campus? So that was when the seed got planted, and it took off from there. But it was a great concept. I'd never really seen that, three plays in 3 weeks as a series that was this ongoing discussion on very, very important issues about race and justice in our city and in our world.
And Daryl, let me kind of come over to you. So the series itself is Jackie Taylor's anti-racism drama series. And so as Tim is suggesting, it all sort of started with these plays getting created, produced in a different setting by the Black Ensemble Theater, right? So this is a second showing, if you will, of these shows. Right, Daryl?
Correct. We have a program here called BPI, Black Playwrights Initiative, where we take African-American playwrights from all levels, from novices to professionals, and give them a platform to write shows for the Black Ensemble Theater. And with that being said, what we did was we put out to them, says, hey, we want to really put out a message of anti-racism in some one-act plays and see what we can do and put them into a festival. So last year, we took these one-act plays and we put them, like Tim said, in 3 separate weekends at the DeSable Museum, and they were a hit, and people loved them, and thank goodness, you know, Tim was there, and he saw the shows and liked them, and the partnership started from there.
And by the way, just to give her due, Jackie Taylor, that is, Daryl, I'll let you answer this one as well. I've interviewed Jackie dozens of times, and I always find it important, no matter what we're talking about, to ask her about her mission in life, because it kind of defines and often redefines everything happening at the incredible work over at the Black Ensemble Theater, much less this program. Can you tell our listeners a little bit, if you go to Jackie right now and said, what's your mission in life, what would she tell you?
To eradicate racism through the theater arts, to use that platform so someday, maybe not in our lifetime, maybe not even in our grandchildren's lifetime, but the theater arts play a very big role in eradicating racism. And starting with the Black Ensemble Theater, not just starting with the Black Ensemble, but the Black Ensemble being a integral part of that discussion.
As the Black Ensemble continues to grow and add that mission and further it every year. Andrea, let me come to you, because you obviously work a lot with students in your role as the director of the Carruthers Center. So we're going to talk about these plays, but there's also a residency program that's part of this show. Can I ask you to talk about that? Because I'm thinking maybe this has something to do with the folks you interact with.
Well, actually, I don't know much about the residency program.
Okay.
That won't take place much here at the Carruthers Center. I would actually have to kick that question back to Tim and Daryl. I believe that takes place more on the main campus.
We'll do that. But so let me ask you then, while I'm with you, is to talk a little bit about how the Carruthers Center enters into this program then.
So Tim brought this idea to me, and the Carruthers Center has long been situated right here in Bronzeville. Has long focused on issues of African-American civil rights and justice and social justice issues. It's been an educational institution for the university for 50 years, but also served as a public square and also one that's always appreciated the arts. So this is a natural marriage between Black Ensemble Theater and NEIU, but specifically the Carruthers Center, because it's always this place, this building, has long been at the center of social justice movements in Chicago. So we're really excited to be a part of that, and it really just continues this long legacy that the Carruthers Center has had in Chicago of social justice initiatives in Chicagoland.
Tim, I know that the Northeastern Illinois University, and I actually did a podcast interview with, I'm drawing a blank on his name now, Richard was his first name, but he just wrote a book about the history of NEIU.
Richard Lindbergh.
Lindbergh. There we go. See, well, my memory is half there. And going back to the founding, but I know that the university itself is all about educational innovation, getting teachers, administrators to make a difference. So let me ask you to talk about a little bit. Well, I don't know if you want to. I think I may end up with Daryl on this the residency program. Actually, can you talk about the residency program?
Sure. Well, so the Black Ensemble Theater is going to come and work primarily with our students in theater, though I think other students will have an opportunity to take part, and they're going to do sort of two master classes around each play, so six total. And, they can be on acting, directing, anything having to do with sort of theater production. And since someone in our theater program has been working more directly with Daryl, maybe he knows more about the specifics of what's actually going to happen, because they've been working it out. This whole process has been very wonderful because of its dialogic nature, and it kind of has just been evolving as it's moved forward in terms of the theater working with us and our students, and they've been very eager to sort of work with our students and our community as a whole.
Daryl, can you fill us a little bit in on this program? Then we'll go to the plays.
Yeah, it's pretty much what Tim was talking about. You know, it's master classes and workshops about theater as a whole. And it's because when you're in a classroom and you're learning about theater and you're learning about different aspects of the business, you kind of learn from a textbook and you kind of learn from, a professor telling you about what's going on. So it's really a chance for people that are in the business, that are working, like active directors that work all over, like Jackie and I and Ruben and other directors that we know, and writers really coming in and letting them know what the real world is like, per se, and actually giving them a chance to really express the vision that they may have for themselves as they move along in their careers, and the ability to listen to, what we do. And just really give them an education on what the real deal is with theater in Chicago and around the world.
Now, as Tim mentioned, there are three plays. When he first saw them, three plays in 3 weeks. Well, here it's three plays over 3 months. And candidly, we've missed that first one. It was in January, the National Anthem show, but that's behind us now. But that's all right, because there's two more to go. And February 7th to 9th is a show called In the Shadow of Justice, directed by our good friend Ruben Eccles. Yeah, and so I can't wait for that. So let me just, I'm going to keep it balanced here go back to Tim. Talk about In the Shadow of Justice from the perspective of what you thought about when you saw it and why this needs to be part of the series.
Okay, well, interesting enough, that's the one I didn't see.
Oh, of course.
So I saw two out of the three.
We'll go to Daryl. Daryl,
dealing with sort of corruption that a black officer and a white officer have to face in working in a police department. This I know, and the play sort of explores how they choose to confront and deal with that, and in their professional lives there in the police department.
And that actually is a good description of it, because the question is, do we just deal with business as usual? I was thinking, Andrea, it's an interesting time for a play like that to take place with all that's been going on in this city.
It absolutely is. I think this particular play will resonate particularly well with our student body. We have a lot of students who plan to attend. We have faculty members who plan to bring groups of students to these plays. So I think this will continue the conversation in ways that we haven't been able to have necessarily as an institution around this. But the play will propel us to talk about these issues more openly. And I do believe that there's a talk that takes place right after the play. So after, once the acting is over, we will, sort of bring the lights up and have a dialogue between the actors in the play and the audience. So, I think this particular play at the Carruthers Center, where we know that there are going to be students who are really sensitive to the issues of this play, it will ring really true to them and really be important for them to be a part of.
Is there anything magical, Andrea, about where, because I know the first play was in the NEIU auditorium, this one is at the Carruthers Center, the third one we'll get to in a moment, the NEIU Stage Center Theater. Was it just about kind of spreading them around campus, or was there any method to the madness of deciding where each play would be presented?
No real method, but we definitely wanted to make sure that we were able to have focus. One of the plays, certainly during Black History Month, we wanted to make sure that, you know, the auditorium here holds 160, so it's a small setting. Again, we can bring the lights up. We can talk to the students who attend class here at the Carruthers Center. You know, the Carruthers Center, again, has been a really important community institution, so we expect that we are going to reach people coming from outside who live right down the street who will come to these plays. So, again, it's sort of a natural fitting for us, both in terms of this play, but with the Black Ensemble Theater, it's a natural fit for the Carruthers Center, for this community, for the students who attend class in this building in particular.
And, Tim, I'm going to let you redeem yourself now on the third play, March 14th to 16th. It's called The Plea. It's by Reginald Williams and our own Daryl Brooks. See, I'm not going to go to Daryl. Why let him talk about it? He's directing it. But talk to me about your reactions when you saw The Plea, because I know you saw that one.
I did see this one, and it is, again, a timely play, but it's very powerful in the way it explores the way our criminal justice system encourages, if not coerces, people to take plea bargains as opposed to getting due process. And so the character in this play is being pressured from many sides, perhaps, to take a plea for a crime he did not commit. I don't want to give too much away because I can't remember what people know and don't know. it explores really this really tragic element of our criminal justice system that does not afford people the due process that ideally people are supposed to have, right? They're supposed to have a right to a trial and a defense. And so we have lots of innocent people getting trapped in a system without the right to prove their innocence. And I'm going to leave it there. There's a lot that happens in the play, but...
All right, well, we'll let Daryl pick it up. So, Daryl, yeah. Two questions for you. Number one, talk to me about the sort of, is there kind of an evolving theme between these three shows, from National Anthem to In the Shadow of Justice and ending with The Plea? Is there a method to that structure? And then talk to me about The Plea in terms of what you're considering as the director of that show.
There is a theme, and it's all about social injustice, of course, but in different aspects and different ways. Like the national anthem was exactly what it sounds like. It was about the national anthem and a college football player struggling with being able to protest the things that are going on, like with Colin Kaepernick and different things, and going through that history. Then you have In the Shadows of Justice, which talks about, I mean, we can say dirty cops, and we can say cops dealing with what we call, of course, the blue wall that we all know about, and how far police officers will go to protect each other, and that it goes from the top down, and dealing with those issues, and what that means for the African-American community. And that was a big part of why we decided to put that show at the Carruthers Center. And then actually The Plea kind of deals with all three together. There's an overtone of just what's going on as far as what's expected of the African-American the justice system and what it does to African-Americans. And what Tim said is exactly correct. It's about just how many times the justice system fails in making and asking young black men or black men, period, black women, African Americans, people of color, to take a plea instead of being able to go to trial, and how things are just put on the back burner because, you know, the justice system, I mean, it fails us, and I'm just going to put it out there. It fails people of color, and it really shows how that's dealt with. And that's what The Plea really is about also.
Andrea, do you expect, I can kind of see an auditorium auditorium sort of filled with students for this, but I can also see the public clamoring to get in. What would you say the goal is in terms of who you want sitting there and watching this? Do you want those? I mean, we heard the comment before about wanting young people, but is it about get those young people in there, or is it about, no, we all need to have a discussion as a community, and that's what those post-show talks are all about?
I would love to have this 50-50. I think the intergenerational conversation is important. You know, so it's one thing to have sort of traditional college-age students, 18, 19, 20. I certainly think that folks, you know, again, in my generation, older, also need to be a part of this because these issues are not new. I think the way in which we think about them and talk about them across generation, you know, is a really important thing to do and have. So I'm really hoping for a 50-50 crowd. I really hope that we get, you know, a good group of students. And actually, we're going to have not just college students, but high school students. We know for sure, you know, will show up at least one of these plays, a group of high school students. So we're looking for an intergenerational conversation and really hoping for a sort of a 50-50 split with students and community members.
And Tim, you know, do you see this, is this in your mind, and is it an annual event? And I don't mean these plays, but do you say this is the start of a dialogue and a start of a conversation, or will you see this as that moment in time when we did this project with the Black Ensemble Theater and that was important?
You know, we've entered into a partnership with the Black Ensemble Theater, and it was Jackie Taylor's belief, and I believe Daryl's too, but the theater's belief that this is just the beginning. And so we need to sort of imagine and see how it evolves, but we view this as the as really the beginning of things that we can do together. From my perspective, you know, the theater has a mission of eradicating racism through the arts. Northeastern is a university committed to diversity. It has an incredibly diverse student population. We view ourselves as an institution committed to social justice. And it's our goal to be engaged with our community and taking on the key issues that are important to the world, and our institution is supposed to be a resource for the world where these conversations happen, and we believe that's a shared mission with the Black Ensemble Theater, and this is to be, you know, an ongoing enterprise. If we bring our communities together, we'll be stronger in that shared mission.
Beautifully put. And Daryl, most people that come to the Black Ensemble Theater have the expectation that they're going to learn something, but they're also going to get a lot of great music, and it's going to be an experience as they learn about the life of all the people that gets presented there, and Patti LaBelle and Dionne Warwick and Sammy Davis Jr. and on and on. I mean, I never miss a Black Ensemble show, Women of Soul, Men of Soul. This is different. And so let me ask you, is this the kind of thing you can see growing also at the Black Ensemble Theater location? Or is this the kind of thing where you say, no, we like the idea of partnering with, in this case, NEIU, and having this very serious message taken out to other places as well?
Well, actually, we love the idea of partnering with Northeastern. But also, we've been doing this for a while. Not a lot of people know about it. And we actually advertise our plays just as much as we advertise our musicals. We've been doing this for some years through our BPI program, and they're all usually social justice shows that really deal with those issues. But being able to have a platform and a partnership with Northeastern actually gives us a place to really grow with what these plays are really trying to put forth, because we both have, you know, similar missions, and we definitely want to grow diversity around the city.
Well, first of all, you give our best to Jackie Taylor. Tell Miss Jackie we missed her. I encourage everybody to get tickets, because these will sell out February 7th to 9th in The Shadow of Justice, and March 14th to 16th, The Plea, directed by our good friend Daryl Brooks. You can get tickets at neiu.edu/tickets, neiu.edu/tickets. And, of course, if you want to just learn more about the Black Ensemble Theater, because I can't talk enough about all the shows that you do over there, blackensembletheater.org is the place to check them out. Daryl Brooks of the Black Ensemble and Andrea Evans and Tim Libretti of NEIU, my thanks to all of you. I wish great success in this important production, and I have a feeling we'll be chatting next year with the next set of installments. Thank you all for spending some time
with me. Excellent.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.